to me, the real yoga is really to meet the challenges of life. But the beauty is like when we conquer our own demons and our own, mental fluff and flurry, then life becomes beautiful. Because then there is a moment of expanded gratitude to where's everything that happened, and you feel connected and you have energy and you find focus and clarity because you rise above all the, weight of, dead materialism. You realize that, wow, there's a lightness here. There's a beauty here. There's a purity to life here that needs to be learned how to embrace.
Welcome to a Curious Yogi podcast. I'm your host, Bobby, joined by living masters and awakening friends. We're here to illuminate your practice as we explore what it means to walk the yogi's path, to unfold peace from within, and to live the vision of oneness. I'm so delighted you're here. Now let's get curious. Welcome back to the show, everybody. I'm so thankful that you're here. And honestly, every time I get through an episode and sit down to record the intro, I feel such an overwhelming sense of gratitude. Yeah, an overwhelming sense of gratitude because it brings so much to my sadhana as well to have these incredible conversations. And it's very soothing and fitting for this week's talk, which is really focused around gratitude, joy, service as the real essence of yoga. And before I introduce you to this week's wonderful guest, I have a couple announcements. One is I have officially opened the doors for my Himalaya retreat 2025. So many people over the last few years have really expressed interest in coming to northern India to see the area, the community where I study and live. And people are curious, what has brought me back to this specific area again and again and again and again, so many times. So after 10 years of exploring and traveling and studying and seeping in the culture and the spirituality of northern India, particularly the northern state of Himachal Pradesh, I've pulled together all my favorite, and I feel most important highlights and areas that I'll be taking a group for 15 days of sadhana, of yoga, of spirituality, philosophy, meditation, and travel and exploration. So I'm really excited to share that with you. The link is on my website and I'll put it in the show notes. And of course, please join the monthly Curious Yogi Satsang. We just finished one a couple of days ago and I love it. It's so amazing to sit with listeners who are curious yogis. We all just get lit up from satsang. We get lit up from exploring and discussing and meditating on the deeper, more subtle, more profound elements of yoga beyond the asana, beyond the physical, beyond the mental. How can we get to that deeper sense? So, patreon.com/acuriousyogipodcast if you want to join us the first Sunday of every month. And with that, I will introduce you to this week's beautiful guest, R. Alexander Madian, who is a beautiful, wonderful yoga teacher from Norway and has an incredible ability to express the real truth and essence of yoga, which I so appreciated in our conversation. Alex has been teaching for 28 years and was certified by the legendary Sri K. Pattabhi Joyce in 2002, which is an honor achieved by only 33 individuals. I did not know that. And in our talk, Alex really respectfully and clearly addresses some of the allegations of Pattabhi Joyce and shares his own personal experience of studying with Pattabhi Joyce. Alex holds an MA in Sanskrit and Indian religions from SOAS University, which, wow, and he's had the privilege of traveling the world teaching yoga. He is the founder of Puro Yoga, the Back in the Ring Foundation, which we do talk about in detail, and Noosan Yoga and Mountain Hotel, and the yoga festival that he hosts there, which I will plug the link for the yoga festival in the show notes because it is coming up in Norway in a couple weeks, and I get the honor of teaching there, and I would love if anybody wants to pop over to Norway and join us there. Alex shares his story of being a classic dandelion child, and despite a troubled upbringing, he became the Norwegian champion in breakdance, 1984, and later in boxing, 1987, before completing a classical ballet education in 1990. He later worked for 5 years as a dancer and musical artist before he had the privilege to teach yoga. So he has had an extraordinary background. He shares his story while reminding us about the importance of not getting stuck in our stories. And we really hit the space here. So thank you for being here. Thank you for listening. I'm so curious to hear what you think of Alex and I's talk. And enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. And I'll see you on the other side. So welcome, Alex, to a Curious Yogi podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you, Bobby. Nice to be here.
It's always nice to, you know, we have these kind of threads of connections, like a mutual friend connected us, and I've been reading about you and reading your bio and everything. It's like we have so much we could talk about today. You have such an extraordinarily unique life history and a perspective on yoga and your experience with Ashtanga yoga and Patabi Joyce. I'm so curious to ask you about that and your work with your foundation, Back in the Ring Foundation, and also the upcoming Noosan Festival. So I feel like we have so much to go for, but I'd love to just start if you could introduce yourself to us, to the listeners, and give us a kind of Cole's Notes. You know, that's the same we have in Canada, like a shortened version of your story of who you are and specifically your spiritual practice. Like what really led you into living yoga and sharing yoga in the way that you do?
Well, first of all, Bobby, nice to talk to you. Nice to be here. It's always a bit problematic when we tell our stories because sometimes we get caught in our stories and that becomes our identity. And with yoga, we're so much more. And there's a beauty of the presence and the here and now, which is, you know, miraculous and beautiful. But you know, I grew up in Oslo, and then basically I lived a basically simple life. I mean, do you want the long and the short version? When I start, you know, it's hard to restrict myself. But you know, I grew up with a very caring mother. I never met my father before I was an adult. And I had a twin brother, and we grew up in a small house in the outskirts of Oslo and lived there. And then basically, you know, my mother eventually found a guy, and we moved around a lot. You know, we moved in 10 different places probably during my youth. So that was tough after that. And then in my teens, I got into, you know, some drugs and crime and all of that stuff because I was ruthless and wild and crazy. And in retrospect, you know, there's a lot of inner pain and sadness that was never really, you know, channeled and worked with. And then eventually, you know, I got into boxing, and that probably saved my life at the time, because instead of going way off the rails, I had something to focus on. And then eventually I got into ballet because I was a breakdancer. And then eventually, you know, I just wanted to learn more about dance because I found it fascinating. And I ended up going to a ballet school for 3 years. And then after that, I worked professionally as a dancer for 5 years. But then in my mid-20s, I came to a yoga class and I was just like, wow, this is so beautiful. I felt, so, of course, an Ashtanga class, being as energetic and wild as I was. And I felt it touched me in a way that was just very deeply. And it was nothing spiritual. It was just like a connection with life and a way of relaxing and being more comfortable in my own skin and feeling at ease in my mind. So I kept on practicing and wanted to, basically for about a year, I practiced only using books and had a routine of doing it every morning before dance class and stuff like that, because it kind of calibrated my body and it made me feel better as a when you had to work as a dancer. And then I eventually moved to London in 96, and from there I just got involved with the yoga scene, and I had a privilege to, meet some interesting teachers there. And I worked in as a chef in a yoga retreat center in Ibiza, and then later in Crete. And I came back to London, studying Sanskrit and Indian philosophy, and went to India first time in 98. And then something just changed, and I never looked back. And yoga just became my path. But I never really had an ambition of becoming a yoga teacher. It's just something I ended up doing because I loved it so much and it was so enjoyable to me. So it was a way of just sharing that joy with others. And then I lived abroad for many years. I left London in 2002, 2004 to go and work in Asia for many years, and then 6 years later, I moved back to Norway. And then I helped, with a few yoga studios there. And I also started this foundation called Back in the Ring, which I wanted to give something back. I started volunteering, teaching in prisons. And we tried yoga as a method to help, drug addicts to overcome their withdrawal and addiction and all of that. And 2013, I took, a group of drug addicts to India. We did an interesting project there, and then this project just started rolling, and now we're, active in more than 20 cities or towns around Norway and 16 prisons on a weekly basis. So
Wow.
that is a remarkable thing. And of course, in the whole process of it, I was like wild enough to start a to take over an old derelict mountain hotel. So we kind of fixed it up and turned it into a yoga retreat place. And now Nursen is a kind of, a professional yoga retreat center, which basically runs all year around. So I have much to be grateful for. And, all of these things happen as a matter of, just wanting to share the yoga and wanting to be of some kind of service through yoga. And a lot of beautiful doors open, and I just kind of stepped in and tried to make the best of it. And here I am 30 years later, working as a yoga teacher, and feeling infinitely grateful for all the things yoga has given me.
Beautiful. Wow, there's so much there. And I can definitely relate to a lot of it in the term, in the sense of having that kind of wildness or that real search outward as a younger person. Like even for myself, I went from dance to yoga as well. They're kind of similar in some ways. And then, but there's that deeper part of yoga that kind of attracted me also. And when you were speaking, especially about the ways that you're being of service, like through your foundation and through Nusen, I think it's such an important part to remember of the giving back, of the being of service, like that yoga isn't just extractive. Like we don't just take from yoga. Actually, there's this reciprocity that is so important. And I think sometimes it gets missed with yoga practitioners. So I love that you're doing that work. And I'm wondering, I really want to ask you a little bit more about your work, like specifically what sparked my interest when you brought that group of drug addicts to India and like the transformation that you saw through them, through yoga and through India. Like, what was that experience like? And what was it the real transformative aspect that you saw in that group?
Well, first of all, India has a mystique and the magic and the, it has all the facets of colors and light and smells and sounds, and it is a country of, wild, wild contrasts. And it's also is a country of, profound, deep, spiritual longing for something greater than ourselves, or just a presence with life and waking up really to what's important. So the reason why I brought them to India was first and foremost to give them a whole new experience of life, and also got them involved in a karma yoga project to help them feel meaningful. Because when you've been a drug addict for a long time, it's like the ultimate selfish obsession, because you get lost due to ignorance, due to pain. You get so, caught up in I, me, and myself that you forget about, just seeing the joy of helping others and using your energy and being of service. So that was basically the main criteria. I wanted to investigate, could a karma yoga project bring about a change in these people? And that was really the main search. And I would say, in retrospect, we had a beautiful journey. We had a beautiful experience, and some of it really took it to heart and loved it. And I'm still practicing yoga today, and some of it was just a great experience, and it got them, out of their, you could say, destructive patterns. And it was a positive change and just a positive experience in their life that they needed.
Beautiful. I think sometimes when we, I'm speaking in general, when people and myself in the past included have thought of, say, a drug addict, it's kind of this like sense of separation. But as I've worked through my own issues with addiction and work and Y12SR, which is yoga of the 12 steps, it's kind of, I'm wondering what you think about this because there is a sense like, oh, a drug addict or an alcoholic, it's kind of this addiction on the level of the extreme. But actually, when we all begin to use the practices of yoga and reflect on our own kind of addictions on a spectrum, or we could call them attachments or things that we do that cause us suffering, that there is a kind of sense that we all are experiencing the same pains. And like when you were expressing about how boxing saved you when you were younger and you were dabbling in drugs and things, when you've worked with drug addicts and when you worked with addicts or people in the prisons, do you feel that sense of sort of connection or brotherhood or sisterhood with these people, that even though they appear to be more on the extreme of the spectrum, that there is a sense of shared experience somehow in our suffering and the way that we process our pain and our reality, like I think it's so easy for people to say like they're an addict, but meanwhile, we're on our phones or we're addicted to something. But because it's a drug or a behavior that's not socially acceptable, it's somehow us and them.
No, I must say that some of the most, I had some beautiful, beautiful connections with people in prisons or people with, drug problems, because once you put away all those filters or all those masks that you try to cover up your being with, then they have nothing to prove anymore, and there's this just a beautiful raw meeting of human interaction. But unfortunately, to get there, with the archetype, many of prisoners are, of course, a little hard and tough on the outside because they are covering up their pain. Like one thing is like the big walls that they are doing their time, but the walls that they created within their hearts and within their minds towards others, and the resentment that they sometimes feel to, other people is cause a lot of distance. So when you can come in and investigate just beingness through yoga, that you really can appreciate just being here now and connecting with the body and finding focus in the mind. When you open up those pathways or channels within, something is sometimes switched on and you feel they light up in a beautiful way. And it is like a connection of, you could say, maybe, brotherhood, sisterhood, just like humanness, that we share something beyond our name and form and persona and identity. And with these people, that when you break down those walls and barriers, that connection gets very strong and it's very beautiful. But one thing is to experience it in a yoga class once or thrice a week, but to keep it up and have it as a daily reminder, that's the tough work. And for us normal people who get caught up in our phone or television or series or whatever that quote catches our attention, it's so important that, addiction is something that runs in all levels of society. But like for a heroin addict, it's so extreme because they just lose everything. Or like for a crack addict, they get so pulled out of themselves. But a more, a smaller type of addiction is, of course, our phone, that we can't sit and be still with ourselves anymore. As soon as we have, 5 minutes, we sit and scroll our phone just to, out of curiosity. And I think addiction sometimes, it start as a, escape from trauma or escaping from inner angst, sadness, and anxiety. But sometimes it's also just some wrong choices, and you don't see yourself before you've gone too far, and then the kind of wrong habits become part of just daily behavior, and then eventually they just rule you, and the beauty is, of course, when, and so somebody who has been an addict or caught up in negative behavior, when they can suddenly taste something else, and if they can embrace that and really cling on to it for all that it's worth, some beautiful, beautiful, radical, transformative changes take place. But the interesting thing about yoga, or I would say deep spiritual practice, sometimes it's our own crisis and our own pain that becomes the catalyst for transformation, because we need to see our own pain and our own confusion and delusion. When we can fully see that, we realize we need something else. When we're just caught up in the forefront in our mind and just kind of navigating according to our needs and preferences and various desires, we get we get confused, and we end up getting deluded sooner or later. But if for a person who has already crashed and they have kind of lost themselves, it's easier for them to surrender to something new, and because they realize they need help. And for me, with all the drug addicts I worked with, it's like you can't really help somebody unless they really want to help themselves. You can send them to all the best treatments in the world. You can have an army of people protecting them, trying to help them. But unless the individual sincerely, like, want to make a change themselves, when life is hunky-dory and we're just living according to our needs and we're caught up in our, fancies, looking for meaning, looking for joy in various places, and people relate to that in a different way. But the beauty of yoga, when yoga is at its best, we find something that is steady. We connect with our being, and we feel that, the essence of life is not really to get all these material things, or to, have all this gadget, or to kind of flash yourself, being caught up in various images or, extreme behavior. The real beauty is just being and to feel that you can be at ease in your mind and that you can feel relaxed in yourself and you can accept yourself as who you are and you know the difference between what is good and what is bad. You know what the value of being kind to others. You know the value of doing good things and lifting people up instead of, you know, pushing people away or, you know, stamping on them.
Beautiful. When you were speaking, I was really reflecting on that kind of like when you said, that the addict, and similarly, I guess anybody that's going through a transformation in life has to want change from within. That, like we have to all each and every one of us have that desire from inside. And sometimes, like, in the addiction terminology, it's like the rock bottom, or even, or sometimes for people that aren't struggling with addiction, it's a death or the loss of a job, or something that kind of shakes up the reality for us to say, okay, something has to change here, and to want it from within, which it's kind of like a grace when that moment comes. We can't kind of will it into happening, that kind of radical, like you said, radical transformation that happens from within. And then when you were speaking, I was also thinking, I'm reading this book right now about addiction called Breathing Underwater. And in it, it's written by a pastor, I think, or some kind of spiritual leader. And he says that some of the most spiritually inclined people he's ever met are addicts, because addicts tend to actually have that deeper kind of openness or awareness to to kind of say, like, something isn't making sense here. But before the boundaries got built, or before the capacity to maybe, like you said, choose right or wrong, the addiction already started taking over that deeply spiritual or open person. Have you noticed that with when you're working or teaching, say, regular people, we can call them, or people that haven't struggled with addiction, versus those people in the prisons and things, that there is a kind of underneath, like you said, that trauma and that pain and those walls, like a deeper inquisitiveness or a deeper openness to that kind of spiritual quest?
I would say in general, it's like it's in all groups of life. You find some people that is truly seeking, connected and longing for true purpose and meaning. And then you find other people who couldn't care less. It's all about, you know, satisfying their needs, so, you know, playing their role, their game, whatever they're caught up in. And I would say, you know, some inmates, some drug addicts are truly genuine and they're seeking, you could say maybe a higher purpose and meaning, but some also are not, you know. Some are very bewildered and confused and filled of, you know, there's a lot of, you know, some people are filled with shame, some people are filled with hardness, some people are, you know, too tough for their own good. They have built so many walls around them that you can't reach them. But in general, I would say that many, particularly drug addicts, are looking for something other, you know, to touch them or lift them up or give them a good feeling. And that sense of longing can be a very good thing when you turn it inwards. Because obviously, when it continues in the extreme, you kind of lose yourself in seeking the pleasures outside of yourself. But to answer your question, I would say I can't say that because I met so many beautiful people in life, you know, and I'm still amazed to see, you know, how many beautiful people there are from people driving the bus, working in the kindergartens, you know, managing our streets, working in the shops. And I've seen some of the, you know, greatest crooks in politics and in religions and as yoga teachers. But I also met some incredibly beautiful people there. And I guess it's the same with the drug addicts. But in general, many of them are looking for something. They have a longing for connection. And if you can satisfy that connection with, something meaningful and build meaningful relationship and guide them towards the ultimate relationship they need is, of course, connecting with themselves, then great magic happen.
Beautiful, nice answer. Yeah, it is. It's so true that life is such a sort of a display of opposites. Like there's going to be those bad apples in every facet of society, and then those deeply open and pure-hearted beings, and then the ones in the middle that's kind of confused or searching for something, but it's like can't quite put your finger on it. What is it that we're searching for? And I think that's something that's so beautiful and inclusive about yoga, is it helps us all, whatever point we're at in our journey, to turn towards that connection with self, that, like you said, ultimate relationship with self, which is, like, for me, I can only speak from my own personal experience, has helped me find meaning in my own life.
But I must honestly say, though, that my yoga journey was, pure narcissistic. I started, it was just like, I loved the practice. I loved feeling good when I lie down in Shavasana. I loved feeling more, in center, more in control of my body, just, feeling fresher, sharper, more awake in my mind. And I guess that's also fine because in the beginning, I didn't, of course, I always had a longing for divinity. And, in my youth, I was actually very, I was raised Christian, and I really felt that love of God going to church, and it touched me deeply. And sometimes it made me sad in my teens how disconnected I felt. So when I, well, what I'm trying to say is like my yoga journey just started narcissistically, but as I got deeper into the practice, as I started reading about, Indian philosophy, yoga philosophy, learning Sanskrit and these things, it sparked a whole new dimension of longing and wanting to understand also intellectually what does it mean? What is this self really? What does it mean to, rest in one's own being, these type of thing? Who am I beyond the mind, thoughts, and ideas that I carry? And I found that the Indian tradition crystallized that whole search in a much more beautiful way than I've ever seen. Of course, I read some of the dialogues by Socrates and by Plato and things like that, but the whole Indian tradition had a acceptance and a, was embracing all the different paths trying to understand divinity. And that I found very stimulating.
That leads me really to another question that I had just a few minutes ago about when we talk about practicing yoga, and specifically yoga asanas, egotistically, or just with the focus on the form, especially in a form of yoga like Ashtanga, which is so physical. And you go to an Ashtanga class, and it's like a lot of beautiful, strong bodies in there. It's I'm wondering how that kind of gap got filled, because so much of yoga that's practiced, even in India, all over the world, it does kind of almost bring us more into the sense of identification with the body. So from your experience, how does the yoga practitioner, like whether it's Ashtanga yoga or any type of yoga, get beyond the kind of get fit part of yoga and, get to those deeper aspects? I guess it does it just come from the desire within? Because I just see in the world so much yoga is just physical focused, right?
I mean, totally, I agree. I mean, a lot of yoga, it's all about bending the body, stretching the body, and learning to be more comfortable in the body. But I guess that's this good start to starting to address the mind, which yoga is really about. It's yoga's citta vritti nirodha and not yoga deha vritti nirodha. So it's obviously that Patanjali is very clear about it's our, yoga is for the mind and how we understand our mind and navigate within our body, mind, conscious nervous system. But there, I think when something is new, like yoga is pop culture, yoga is very new in our modern world, and we haven't really seen the effects of what consistent, steady yoga practice over 30, 40 years does to an individual over time. For me, it was very clear quite early that just trying to jump through hoops with a physical body was a dead end. And because I tried so hard with dance, break dancing, gymnastics, whatever it is, trying to push the body to extreme, and I really knew and I had experienced that it only ends in aches and pain. You can master it to a certain level and be like really on top of your game for maybe a few years, and then it all fades. And who are you then? Are you a bad yoga practitioner? So for me, it was much more interesting to use the physical practice as a tool to investigate my reactional patterns, to investigate, my own sense of beingness within those movements that I did. What happened when I got into those postures? What happened to my mind? How could I, let go of the kind of physical display of it? And as I learned that, I also found I became more soft from within. And I've actually become more flexible, at least in my mind. But, I also had a privilege of, meeting Patabi Joyce first time in 98. And I tried to really impress him, because I'd learned, basically, I'd been in India for 3 months before I got to practice with him, and I, or 4 months actually, and I pushed and sweat and, were working for 2 hours at least every day with a physical practice in my own small little room in Lakshmipuram, trying to impress him because I wanted him to show him that I could do all the three series when I came to him. And basically, he had one look at me, and at I was like a racehorse, ready to just, okay, I'm ready to go, I'm ready to go. And basically, he ignored me for 3 months, just looking in another direction every time I tried to call his attention. And he wasn't even interested. And I tried to, impress him with some second and third. He said, hey, you do only primary series. He didn't want me to do anything more advanced than that. And that I was actually really grateful that he did, because he saw my exhibitionistic behavior that has gone off the rails, and that I was doing yoga just for show, just for trying to impress. I wasn't really doing yoga for myself. I was doing yoga like a ballet performance. You're out there and you're trying to. So it was, it was that kind of, you could say, strong wall that he put up and said, look, I'm not interested in your madness. Stop this crazy nonsense you're doing. And once I did that, once I could accept, that I were nobody and I had nothing to prove, I have nowhere to go, then eventually I started experience yoga on a deeper level with him.
Yeah.
And that was really beautiful. And that's started to shift a lot of things.
Wow, that's such an extraordinary story that you had that experience with Patabi Joyce. And I'd love for you to talk a little bit more about, well, that sounds kind of like the kind of apex of your experience was kind of the humility that came in just from recognizing your own, like you said, madness. And Can you just talk a little bit more about what it was like to practice with him and to be certified by him? Like only 33 people in the world have had that honor. It's quite extraordinary, and he must have been quite late in his life.
I met Guruji first time when he was born in 1915. So I met him when he was 83. So obviously when you're 83, you're quite limited physically. And there's, it's sad enough as it is. There's been a lot of, unfortunately, have come to the surface that, Pattabhi Jois, touched some women in the wrong places and all of that. And I'm just like infinitely sad on behalf of whoever experienced that. I never saw it. I did hear about it. And of course, it's sad and wrong in all ways. But Pattabhi Jois was all, he loved to, somehow push people's buttons and like really just confront them with various stuff. But I can't really comment on all that Me Too thing that has happened in later years, that has come to the surface. All I can say is like, I feel embarrassed about that. But my relationship with Pattabhi Jois, I'm infinitely grateful for, because it started off like a guy that wanted nothing to do with me. He just basically said, get out. Actually, first time I came to the Shala in Lakshmipuram, I was about to register, but I thought I'd go up and sat and I did some meditation instead. And he's like, who are you? Who are you today? Get out. He just says, basically threw me out of the Shala. And then eventually, 3 months later, when I come and practice with him, which he was also very resistant to, he just avoided me for three months. He couldn't care less about what I was doing. But then when my perspective of seeing things changed, he was like there in a whole new way. And all I can say that the atmosphere that he created in the Yogashala was unique. Because yes, it was fun and it was playful and it was light, but it was always about turning your perspective inwards. It was about creating a safe space where people could relax and breathe. And, when you've gone to a Mysore room, whoever holds a good space in a Mysore room where people, practice their sequence in silence, there is a very beautiful energy and presence of connectedness of people breathing, moving in and out of various asanas. But Pattabhi Jois, he managed to kind of hold that space in a very beautiful way. And then I have much more to say about, private interactions with Pattabhi Jois and asking him questions about yoga and learning to know him. He was a very simple man, he was not that particularly advanced in philosophy or Sanskrit, like some people like to say. That's just some people, trying to praise their Guruji, put him on the pedestal. He was a very, very simple person. But in his simplicity, he had a pureness of heart of really, having total faith in the yoga that he stood for and the deeper aspects of yoga. To him, the asana was, of course, just a tool to start looking through the many layers in our mind. And he was very consistent and clear about, you don't need to learn all these advanced stuff if you want to go deeper in the practice. It's connecting with the breath and seeing your mind. But what I was most fascinated with Pattabhi Jois is like he came, he lived up, he grew up all in a quite, he came from a quite, simple background. But his dedication to yoga, and I would say gratitude towards yoga, was immense. And his service for just passing on whatever little he knew of yoga. He never claimed to be enlightened. He never claimed to be something special, but he was very clear that yoga works if you do it.
And the gratitude piece, like that's even something that you said right at the beginning of our talk, I think before we even recorded, that you're grateful. And that, you know, in addiction recovery, we have the saying, the attitude of gratitude is what helps keep us sober. And it's like also even to hear that Patavi Joyce, and also thank you so much for acknowledging the accusations and things. Like I actually don't know much about that, so I do appreciate that. But that even him, somebody that's revered or put on a pedestal, that how important that not even idea of gratitude, but in practice to be thankful, to be in service, like you also have said, in a way that we can live the principles of yoga, not only when doing the primary series or the second or third series or doing the asana, but actually to live that gratitude of yoga, which is that connection with the self, that sense of like the gratitude or the connection that you have with life, and how we that we had that's actually then that's applied yoga, then that's the lived yoga, that gratitude.
It all opens, it starts with gratitude. You know, if we can't find gratitude towards life and the present and what is happening right now, it's very difficult to embrace life. And there's a lot of wisdom and potential awakening in gratitude.
Yeah, and also like the gratitude for everything, because it's so easy for my preferences, my attachments and aversions to say I'm thankful for this, for my family, for my job, for my blessings. But how can we kind of open our hearts and our practice, the lived practice, to I'm grateful for everything, even that moment that brought me to my knees, where then the transformation made was the start of the transformation was made possible. But I think it's important to remember also that when we practice gratitude, it's not preferential gratitude. It's actually I'm opening my hands to all of life, which means sometimes it's easy on the system and sometimes it's uneasy, but the practice is what grounds me and roots us in the ability to kind of remain the watcher, remain the witness.
That's really beautifully put, and it's easy to be grateful when you have everything that you need. But when times are really difficult, or you like when challenging moments arise, equally be grateful for that. It's a whole new level of practice for sure.
Definitely, definitely.
But
Well,
that's you know, but there, my experience is that if you can be grateful for whatever happens and just show up and do your best, you know, then great things happen. But if we cannot embrace the moment and be grateful about things, then of course we're running away and we're causing more separation.
it's very true. And just to wrap up our conversation, it's been so amazing talking with you, Alex. I really appreciate your insight and your lived wisdom that I know you just live every day, or you try to live, I'm sure, every day.
I also know I fail every day. That's
but
the beauty of yoga, because when we get off track, we know, hey, okay, need to, realign here. And everybody think, like sometime, trying to live a yoga lifestyle is all about, roses and, relaxations and good smells and good vibe. But to me, the real yoga is really to meet the challenges of life. But the beauty is, like, when we conquer our own demons and our own, mental fluff and flurry, then life becomes beautiful. Because then there is a moment of expanded gratitude to towards everything that happened, and you feel connected and you have energy and you find focus and clarity, because you rise above all the weight of, dead materialism. You realize that, wow, there's a lightness here. There's a beauty here. There's a purity to life here that needs to be learned how to embrace. And all the times I fail with that, things get tough and struggling and difficult. And once I, rise above that, I see that, wow, this beautiful dance of life that is unfolding is not really my creation, but it's something much more bigger than that. And I need to realign with that rather than push my will and my needs on that. It needs to be seen for the greater synchronicity that life is, and that we're part of something infinitely, great, all of us, and when we can reconnect and acknowledge that shared humanness that we sh share, rather than all this division and divides we make, then I believe there's great hope for humanity.
I agree. And also, like, that kind of humility and the openness that is required, like you said, to kind of get out of the will of our mind, because the society that we live in kind of reflects the importance of willing and struggling and
Yeah.
striving to, like, be somebody, like,
Of
you
course.
said, the dead materialism. But actually, the kind of, yeah, the humility or the softness or the letting go that's required, which is what, is yoga essentially, to kind of live life with that perspective or that view. It can be quite extraordinary to live as a human in this shared experience we're all having, and also that it's a continual practice. Like, it's not just like, tick, I achieved yoga. It's like every day, or inevitably life will bring us something that's going to be hard, and then we have to keep kind of moving forward. It's continual. It's not an end point. It definitely feels, for me anyways, like a continual stretch.
But it's so interesting, like when we grow up and we get an education, we have to force ourselves to just to be focused and to do the work or whatever, and we get caught up in, sports or whatever it is, and we force, we push, we try to break records, and we're always trying to be better, be faster, be jump higher, whatever it is. But yoga is, of course, about practice. We really need to practice in order to up our game. You need to learn how to find stability in your mind when the nature of the mind is so restless. It takes effort, it takes trials, it takes focus, it takes steadiness to bring about, a greater mental stability. But that's not the end game with yoga. The beauty of yoga is that the letting go part that we sometimes forget, that's where the real magic happen, I believe. And we really do our best and we work hard and we show up every day and do the things we can, but letting go and accepting that, we are, full of flaws. We lose focus, we lose touch. But there is a when you can get away from all the, the goals, the ambitions, the things we try to achieve, and rather relax with life and do as good as we can, really, and be content and happy with that. Then there's a whole new joy and a whole new level of clarity that arises. At least that's my personal experience, that the real beauty of yoga is, like, yes, in the initial phase, it's about practicing hard, but after some time, it's about letting go, accepting, and being flexible. Embracing things, as you see, being grateful and really seeing that there's a infinite potential in every moment that should be embraced, and that we are incomplete as human beings without finding that deeper completion of being connected to the self.
I love it. You kind of are almost perfectly describing, like, the tapasya, like the transformation through the heat. Like, we do the hard work, and then Ishvara Pranidhan, like we have that moment of surrender where God is with us and we're just there and open. And that was kind of a just kind of made me kind of open to that when you were speaking. And speaking of the magic and the joy and the beauty of yoga, I'd love if you would just share with the listeners a little bit about the magic that's going to be happening at Nüsen for the festival that's coming up at the end of the month. If anybody's listening and wants to come visit beautiful Norway.
Yeah, from the 21st to the 28th, we have what's called Norwegian Yoga Festival. It's the 10th year in a row we organize it. And it's a festival trying, it's for the kind of yoga enthusiasts and also the people who are, more sincere practitioners. And we try to have a theme every year. And this year it's joy. And joy is, of course, for my son, it's eating ice cream. For the old people, it's, being able to get out of bed. So joy is different according to where we are in different stages of our life. But according to yoga, the our inmost connecting with life and connecting with this mystery of life is ultimately blissful and joyful because we are joy, I believe. And I believe that as human beings, we should learn to embrace the joyful things that lifts us up. And of course, like a drug addict, they've been confused and bewildered, and they try to look for joy where it's completely pitch dark, and it just leads to more and more suffering. But for those who are able to find joy in that which gives meaning and purpose and lifts you up, that's a beautiful path to start a gradual transformation. And when yoga is as its best, I believe that it puts us in contact with something that is infinitely real, that is the same in all of us, and that is very real and heartfelt if we can embrace it. And if we just look at the suffering that is all around in the world, and even people who have all the fame and material wealth they can use, still infinite pain is there. So I just know for myself that if I can embrace what is joyful and meaningful and realize that if I can also help lift other people up, then my joy is twice as good, If I'll only be If I become too selfish and egocentric and just care about I, me, and myself, I become separate from people. And there's not much joy in recognizing, divinity that is all around. You can't take divinity and keep it in a glass or lock it in a safe and keep it for yourself. It gets bigger and amplified if we can recognize it and see it, in others. And that's one of the themes, or the main theme for this year's festival, trying to investigate various types of joy. And, when dedicated people come together, hopefully we can take some new experiences from the festival, and that will maybe help us as individuals. Finding purpose and meaning and joy with the things that is more sustainable rather than the fleeting pleasures of satisfaction that ultimately end up just, wearing us out.
Beautiful. I didn't know that was the theme is joy. So I'm so delighted that I get to participate and come and share yoga there with you and all the wonderful community that you've created over the 10 years. It's going to be a wonderful experience. So I'll definitely put the link to the festival and to Nüsen in the podcast show notes. So, you're doing retreats there with incredible teachers, like world-renowned teachers who host retreats there. So I'll put the links in the show notes for people to find Nüsen and come visit beautiful Norway. I'm so excited. I've been to Oslo once for one day, so I'm very excited to see the countryside there. And just to finish our conversation, I love to ask the guests three quick questions to finish. So The first question is, which scripture do you turn to, yoga text or otherwise, to inspire your practice?
I would say Bhagavad Gita without Bhagavad Gita, then the Upanishads, then the Yoga Sutras, things like that. But definitely the Bhagavad Gita is this text I always relate to, and it's a text that, explain many facets of yoga and Indian philosophy, and it speaks to the heart, and it helps us, connect with something personal. Because our relationship to divinity, or that is very difficult to try to explain that. But the Bhagavad Gita kind of speaks to the heart and awakens a spark for the readers. If you can, put your analytic mind aside a little bit and just see Arjuna's dilemma, Krishna's kindness, and his words of wisdom that he conveys to Arjuna, then as human individuals, we recognize the power of free will. We recognize that there is infinite potential in finding balance, centeredness, clarity, and that we, the world is there to actually help us and not to conquer us. And like Prakriti, pure Sankhya philosophy, Prakriti is there to show us something, to reveal
Beautiful.
to us, what we are not, but what is the ultimate thing sustaining us.
Beautiful little. If anybody what hasn't read the Gita yet, now you've inspired everybody to go out and read it without the analytical mind. That's a good asterisk on reading the Gita. My teacher, he would always say, you read the Gita not as Arjuna, but as Krishna, who is your own highest self, that is your own kind self guiding us there. And the second question is, three words to describe your own personal sadhana.
Consistency, clarity, surrender.
Beautiful. And finally, if you had to sum this conversation up in one sentence.
Joyful.
Nice. I agree. I would have
Light.
said that. Nice. Well, thank you so much, Alex. It's been great to connect, and I'm so excited to meet you in person in a few weeks. And just really excited to share this episode and share your wonderful insights and the joy that you obviously live in the joyful way you speak about yoga. It's really inspiring, and I really appreciate your time. I know you're a busy dad, you've got lots going on, so thanks for taking the time.
Thanks, Ipopi. I really look forward to for you to come to Norway and share your wisdom and lightness and joy with us at the Yoga Festival. We feel truly grateful, and the 12-step program that you also convey. So thank you for that.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed what you heard, please consider supporting the show at patreon.com/acuriousyogipodcast. And please leave a review. It really helps the show reach more people. Let's stay curious, connected, and keep walking the path together. In total delight, this is Bobby signing off until next time.